This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
So today is the 31st of December, 2012, New Year's Eve. Tomorrow is a new year. And those of you who were at the Birmingham meeting at the end of November took the opportunity, because that was the end of coming up to the end of our 6th year as an independent group, suggested that you took the opportunity to reflect upon the past 12 months, and this is traditionally what we do. We are all meant to reflect upon our year that's just about to finish, and then reflect upon the new year, and hopefully refine ourselves in thought, word, and deed as we launch ourselves into the new year. So a convenient opportunity to refresh ourselves, although that doesn't stop us from refreshing ourselves even on a daily basis. We don't have to wait one day of the year to do this. In fact, the nature of our training is that we should always be refreshing, never be complacent, never think, I've got it, I'm doing it, and then cruise along thinking that everything is in place. It's a characteristic of our training that we are forever renewing ourselves, forever reflecting, ever pondering. Wherever we are, however we may feel, we may be having a good stretch. A stretch where we're not feeling particularly challenged. Maybe we've had periods when we have been felt very challenged and had a great difficulty in just keeping the training going. But now we've come into a calm period where things are rather nice and lovely, and that's to be enjoyed. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but it also carries its dangers in that you want to hold on to that. Of course, in a sense, it's a natural thing to want to do, and not rock the boat, as it were, so that you end up having to deal with things again, look at things and be with things. We have to be very careful of that, enjoy it on one level, but on another level, make sure that we're not dropped into some comfort zone and we're not avoiding stuff that we were coming up against in the past doesn't seem to be around at the moment, so we just stay in that comfort zone thinking, well, this is lovely, everything is fine, I'm that there's nothing for me to reflect upon. We have to be careful of that. As I say, it's very nice to have these stretches, but in a sense, true Dharma practice, when we're truly engaging ourselves with ourselves, because that's Dharma practice, when we're engaging ourselves with ourselves, there should always be a little bit of an edge there, not a great sharp edge, because that's difficult to endure and you can't put up with that for too long. But the opposite of that is to have no sense that actually I'm training, that I'm just cruising along. And normally when you do that, you give very little attention to the practice, very little reflection, very little sort of commitment there. That's the other extreme. The ideal is to have a little bit of an edge where you feel a little bit of a little. It's almost like a sense of frustration that you're gently pulling on the reins. There's something that wants freedom to run off, as it were. But you're just gently holding it to the extent that it's not unbearable. It's something that you can live with. You can learn to live with. A little bit of discomfort in your body, certainly not in your head, in your body, in your emotion, in your horror. So that energy, that the life force that's untamed, that runs off through your habits, you're just with your awareness. Your awareness is that which pulls on the reins, which gently says, no, 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 no. Just calm down. Just don't go running off. And that's not a big yank. That's just a gentle guidance. And if you do that, often, it's not something that you may have all the time, but often you get this sense, you get this physical presence of, it's almost like a frustration, and it's a little bit uncomfortable. I always think that that's the ideal place to be, experience to have with this training, because it's showing that you are containing, you are training that willfulness that we have, that part that's always appropriated by the notion of a self, of trying to express itself and going off and grabbing and holding on to experiences, habits, desires and aversions. To have that sense with you, I always feel, I've always, you know, very often these things are in hindsight, I've always felt that's just keeping the kettle ticking over. So it's just bubbling a little bit, not going crazy, but just that's the ideal. If you can find yourself there, you can consider that and live your life and do what you do, come and go and whatever it is that you fill your days with, I'll just carry on, but have that sense. I always feel that that's the, to me, that's the optimum. Of course, there are times when it becomes very difficult and you are seriously pulling on the reins. Something is very powerfully emotional that you are trying your best not to be carried away by, falling into your habits and creating more karma for yourself, just reaffirming whatever that may be, so that the thing just keeps perpetuating and never ends. Indeed, can often get stronger, more powerful. Sometimes we have to do that, then you really know that you're in the thick of things then. And we do our best to, when the wildness goes, starts to really pull, that we give our utmost attention, because it's your attention that allows you to retain. When you talking of awareness yesterday, when you have your awareness present, then you always have that ability to pull on the reins. When you lose your awareness, then it's like you slacken off on the reins, and when you do that, the horse or the bull, the ox rather, runs off in its wildness, and then, as you can imagine, trying to stop something when it runs, when it bolts, you're not going to pull it back. It's going to keep running till it exhausts itself. These are the experiences that we have, and that is very much about putting on the reins. But beyond that, on a more, much more subtle level, on a more sort of day-to-day level, as it were, where things are not, where we're not being caught by our strong attachments, but by lesser things. And one of the major, again, it comes back to one of the major characteristics that we need to keep the reins on is our restlessness. Is that's where the untamed energy wants to be going all the time, finding avenues to take you down so that you're never still, so you're not with yourself, so you're not with what's in front of you, you're not in the moment. You're giving in your, some pandering to your restlessness, allowing this, giving space to these forces that want to take you away from where you are now. Again, your awareness, you become alive to this, and unlike the past, now you say, no, I'm not gonna play this game, I'm not gonna become a victim of restlessness. And you are a victim, because restlessness is not something that goes somewhere and then stops and rests. It will take you somewhere because you've given into it, and then in no time at all it will want to take you somewhere else. That's called restlessness, and you buy into it, thinking that if I just have this, if I just do this, I will be content, I will be peaceful and settled. So you fall for it and you go for it, and then in no time it will want to take you to another place. That's called restlessness. Not something that takes you to one place and then you stop. Or if you do stop, you're not there for very long. And you buy into that. And so this wildness is never... You're not pulling on the reins. You're not gently saying no. I mean, I'm not a... I have no particular experience with animals. In fact, I don't have any experience like riding a horse. Well, I've only been on a horse once or twice. And it's amazing the games that you play. There's something that's actually really quite intelligent. And you go, and it's just... I don't know whether it's just my experience or whether this is people who know about horse riding, where you play a game, a power game, with the horse. Who's going to be the boss? Is it going to be you or is it going to be the horse? Who's going to take charge of this exercise of that you're about to... And it's like a game that it plays, that it tries to see if it, what it can get away with, just like a child, exactly like a child, see what it can get away with, and how much slack you are prepared to give it, so that it gets its own way, or whether you let it know from the beginning who the boss is, and you don't allow it to indulge in its restlessness and its wildness. And so you, not in a vicious way, but you're always letting it know who the boss is. So in the end it gives up and it does what you want to do. That's been my very limited experience in riding a horse. And it's a very good analogy for your own wildness, that there is always that part of you that's always like a child, that is always testing you to see if it can have its way. See what, putting these little carrots out to see if you can, if you follow. And then you, and if you follow, you follow. But on the often misunderstanding that if you follow this, then that's good enough. That's done it. That will just settle the thing. And then you will find out where you really want to be or what you want to be doing. but in fact, what happens is that once you follow it, soon enough it opens up another avenue and another one. And all the time that you're doing that, you're not taming, you're not training, you're the victim. of something that will actually never settle. We'll always have a wildness there that will never be able to express its true nature. When that wildness is tamed, for us, we can see that as being the true human being. But until that's tamed, it is something of willfulness, something that's completely self-centered, that only looks out, only thinks of itself, only wants for itself. And that's what the training, it takes us to that place where we are taming. And that taming is continual. But taming is a skillful act. It is not a brutal act. It will not work through brutality in the same way that it will not work if you're too passive. If you give in too much, it won't work. There's a balance, there's a middle way between those two. And that's for us to find. And if we can find that, I think you do get that little sense that you're just pulling on the emotional reins to stop it. And that gives you a little bit of a sense in your body. There's nothing to do with the head. We're not interested in the head. This is in the body, in your emotions. And this is where the taming takes place. This is where the volition of your attachments get challenged, where the volition that your attachments need volition, your desires, your aversion, and your fears are all emotionally based. Energy, if you like, the life, I don't like the word energy so much, the life force gets polluted, gets appropriated, and the wildness that then takes you over. You then become the victim of these forces that pull you this way and pull you that way through your desires and your aversions, but also bubbling up through fear. Without the emotion, we wouldn't experience any of those extremes. We need the power of attachment, the power of reactivity, in order for these experiences to be what they are. And we are forever, eternally pulled around by this wildness. I say the perfect analogy is to look at a horse that has to be tamed. If you don't tame it, it doesn't tame itself. It will be wild for its whole life. Like the ones in the wild, no doubt, are like this. It becomes tamed because it's trained. There is somebody who trains it, and there's a relationship that's developed between the horse and the trainer. And it's a skillful relationship. It isn't one of brutality, one of mastery. Because you try to force the animal into doing something, that it's ultimately doesn't allow itself to pass into. There'll always be a very unskillful relationship between the two, and the wild horse will no doubt get its revenge somewhere down the road. Whereas the skillful way is to, by all means, have the discipline and that commitment to be forever learning to restrain the animal. But you must give it some space to be able to move and to be able to breathe, but within a framework, a sort of a give and take, where a friendship, a trust develops between the two. It's a relationship of trust, so that when the horse can eventually trust the trainer, who's not out to get it, not out to harm it, but actually is actually quite friendly and looks after it, that the two can then become one. And the horse eventually allows the trainer, trusts the trainer to the extent that it allows it to climb onto its back, and then allows it to ride on it, and allows the trainer to guide and do the things that it wants to do, and there's a happy relationship that takes place between the two, the merging of the two, and the taming that is, has taken place, but taken place skillfully, so there is a bond and a friendship and a trust that's there, so they become one. It's perfect in that, and Zen has that with the ox and this herdsman. We're not so familiar with oxes in our culture, but we have some connection with things like horses. It's the same principle, and that principle we take to ourselves is that we have to learn to be friendly with ourselves, learn to trust. This isn't a brutal exercise, this isn't one of force and willfulness can be one of the major aspects of this training, that we can get this training so wrong that we think that so much of it is to do with willfulness, is to force ourselves into doing something. We misunderstand discipline for willfulness. And we got to see the difference. It's so easy. In fact, the two actually do come together, in a sense. But in terms of Dharma training, we really must learn to identify what is discipline, what is containment, and what is willfulness of our forcing. And we got to find that, identify the two, because if we fall into that trap, that's the word I was looking for, if we fall into the trap to think that this training is somehow, it's got a willful component to it, then what you'll do is that you will make the horse even more, you'll reinforce the wildness of the horse, the destructivity of the horse, so that you become something destructive. You will not be a tamed human being that has sensitivity and compassion, but rather something that turns into a bull man, as it's often expressed. History is full of bull men, isn't it? People who get up there and want their way and do anything, wreak any destruction in order to get their way. Those are people that have gone the complete opposite way to what we're going in. And we need to learn to tame in a skillful way. And that's something to be learned, and we have to be forever checking ourselves and ever seeing that we are on the path of taming. But taming in a skillful way, so that it's not forcing, it's not willful, and it's not slothful, where we just go into the slothfulness of what you can very into the comfort zone, which you can do, which is very, very evident in Buddhism, that we don't go into the comfort zone, and yet we don't go into the willfulness, again, that you can often see in Buddhism, of people trying to achieve, trying to tame the wildness that we all have to tame, to learn to still ourselves, learn to find the stillness, to find the silence. But get to that place in a skillful way, not try to force our way into that experience, because that will never work. It cannot work. But so many of us don't seem to be able to clock the difference between commitment and willfulness. And commitment, what comes with commitment, one of the major features that comes with commitment in a skillful, the skillfulness that we learn to identify and learn to hone, one of the major components, one of the major features of that training is patience. that's the counterbalance to willfulness. Willfulness is always wanting it now. I want. Willfulness is a goal orientated. I want to be like that. I want this. And I'm going to get it. And whatever gets in my way, I'm going to push out the way so that I can get this. Well, maybe that works in the, well, it does work in the world, although it's not a very pleasant way of doing things, but people do it and they get away with it. But it's not a very human way of being. What we learn to do, we can't help wanting to be free, wanting to be released. We can't, it's perfectly natural to be liberated, to have that freedom and that spaciousness. Of course, to be free of suffering. Of course, there's something wrong with you if you, well, you wouldn't be here. Clearly, it's got to be, it's an aspiration. But in order for that to be, for that to become your experience, for that to be actualized, there is a journey that we're on. And that journey, one of the major, it's one of the paramitas, is the patience. You have to be patient with yourself. And patience means that you have to develop kindness, acceptance, willingness to accept that you're doing your best, to know that you're doing your best. And really, that's as much as you can ask of yourself. And it is what it is. Whatever your stuff is, and all of our stuff in one sense is exactly the same, but in another way, it's different for each of us. It comes in different degrees with different pictures and stuff. But fundamentally, we're all on the same experience. Is to be patient and not force it. Because that's ego. Nothing but ego. That's willfulness, ambition. But to have that patience, what goes with the patience, what makes the patience, characterizes the patience, is the willingness to bear with the experiences along that journey. So it's not just patience, which can be just almost a mental thing. It actually has a physical component, because we're dealing with our own emotional wildness, taming the life force so that it goes back into its true nature, its original nature, is that we have to learn to bear with. And that's the Kshanti. It's not just patience, but it's patient endurance. To just endure quietly, humanly, what needs to be endured is that wildness slowly gives up, untames, and comes into that, reverts back into who you truly are, the true humanness. We have to bear with. That's the paramita there. Not just patience, but patient endurance. And we need to identify these things, and you know, this is not just some exercise. We have to bring it into our training, and we have to bring it into our lives and realise, well, this is it, this is the way it works. It may not be the way that I would like it to be, but this is the way out of suffering, is that we have to bear with, is that we have to suffer before we can go beyond suffering. How can you go beyond suffering by not suffering? That's the way it works. That's the irony, if you like, is that the way out of suffering, the way to liberation, is through suffering. And unless you do see and acknowledge what we call, suffering's a very powerful word, the dukkha, the unsatisfactory nature, our unsatisfactory nature, unless you're prepared to see it and to acknowledge it and to accept it and to make friends with it, it's never going to transform. It's never going to fall away. You're never going to be able to see through it. You're never going to be able to see its reality, however you want to describe these things, wherever you want to put yourself but the perception of it is that we have to acknowledge that this is the way that it is, and it's never going to be any other way, and that this training is very challenging because of that. And I think we have the opportunity now, again, I think it's something that should be with you on a daily basis, but you know, as it's a part of our culture, and it's probably universal, I don't know, at the end of the year, it gives us the opportunity just to stop and renew ourselves, refresh ourselves, like losing a layer that we've been, that starts off clean and fresh, but slowly grows old and begins to become undesirable. It gives us that opportunity to reflect upon our training, not to reflect, but the opportunity to be new. So we can just keep, and what this training, you know, one of the major features of this training is however you conduct yourself in the world, and however you maneuver yourself through circumstances, however you may duck and dive in your, whether you do or not, I don't know, but however, this may be a part of your personality. There's one person you can't duck and dive with. And there's one person you have to be absolutely nakedly honest with at all times, and that's yourself. Play games with others if you must. Don't play games with yourself. See yourself for what you are. Don't try and throw veils over. We do that for other people, but we shouldn't do it for ourselves, definitely as people doing this training. We need to look at ourselves. We need to see ourselves in front of the mirror as we are. And if you're going to play games with that, then you just, well, that's all you're doing is playing games. And of course, when you look at yourself in the mirror without anything, any stuff that's masking you, very often you don't like what you see. That's why we cover ourselves up. We don't like what we see very often. And that's what we do in the world so often. But in Dharma we can't do that. And when you metaphorically look at yourself in the mirror, see what's there. Don't try and manipulate it. But look at it and say, this is the way I am. And it's not good, it's not bad. That's the trap that we almost instantly fall into. Good and bad, right and wrong. And this is where we end up conflicting with ourselves and not liking ourselves. We see something we don't like. You're no good. I don't like myself. Or the voice comes, you're no good. And then you say yourself, I'm no good. I'm this. I'm an ugly person. I'm a selfish person. I'm this. And you go through all the different adjectives to describe your personality purely from a negative point of view. Not when you do that. You don't like yourself, and you're reinforcing, I don't like myself, and so you just keep heaping it on. But if you begin to understand how this works, and I've been saying all week, and I was saying yesterday in particular, this is about awareness, about seeing and about knowing, and the characteristics of awareness is that it's a mirror. Awareness doesn't have an opinion. When you look at yourself and you say, I don't like yourself, that's got nothing to do with your awareness. That's to do with the conditioned world that you've created, that then comes into play and just reinforces itself. In amongst all of that morass is your awareness. that doesn't have opinions, that doesn't get sucked into that dualistic interplay that goes on, but sees and knows. And that's what we should encourage ourselves to, just see ourselves for what we are. Here it is. And when you see yourself, this is what it is, you accept yourself. You accept it. How can you not accept it? If you don't accept it, then you're playing a dualistic game. If you see what's in front of you, if you see a flower in front of you, you see a flower. You don't say, well, there's a tree. It's not a tree, it's a flower. So you don't start manipulating it. And it's not this, it's not that. It's just, it is what it is. And you can see yourself in that uncluttered, with that uncluttered I, where this is the way I am. There's no conflict there. It's not a case of not liking yourself. There's no reaction that's going on there. But you're seeing yourself, and when you see yourself with that reaction, then you accept yourself. This is the way it is. This is the way I am. And that there, you're on the threshold of change, because you're no longer feeding what needs to be fed in order to keep this, especially that negative self-view, which is very powerful for us people. Not many of us Westerners are free of that one. We don't like ourselves, and we have to be honest about that. And that is a big one for us. And we don't like ourselves because of always feeding that image. And we have to learn to identify that, learn to see all awareness again, learn to see that I'm just playing that, I'm just carrying on reinforcing this thing. In fact, I'm making it worse because I'm disliking myself even more. I'm coming up with new ways of describing myself. Just read the dictionary and I found a couple of more words I've never used before, so I'll start using those now. So, and that self-loathing, which is big time. It's our biggest impediment. Never mind all your bits and pieces and your history of this and your mother and your father and all the rest of it. Our biggest thing, with very few exceptions. There are exceptions, of course, there always are. But for most of us, is that we don't like what we see, and we can tear ourselves apart very easily. And I've done it, and it's absolutely horrible. And you don't know the way out of it. You don't know how you can stop something that's so strong that just it doesn't leave you. And it's not an easy thing to extract yourself from. Of course it isn't. And that's where that is the biggest feature of your self-identity. That's where you live. That's where the sense of me lives. Is its most secure area that it lives in, is that it doesn't like itself. It's okay, it's got nothing like and dislike, it's got nothing. The self is neither interested in liking or not liking, it just wants to feel alive. And that sense of self, the aliveness of the self, is at its most powerful for us people in our relationship with ourselves. And if it's negative, then it's very, very ingrained. And somehow we've got to find our way through that. Turn the ship around. Somehow stop it. No longer. How do we do that? Dharmically, how do we do that? Well, it's no different than any other aspect that you're dealing with. Is that you learn, you become alive to the fact that you do feed it, that you do indulge in it. And the way that we begin to turn the ship around is that somehow we can begin to stop ourselves from going there. When you see yourself about to beat yourself up again, say, no, it's changing. This is not right. It's time for change. And that isn't essentially about doing anything. It's waking up to seeing what you're doing. And just say, well, I'm not going there anymore. I'm not going to feed that anymore. I'm going to open and accept who I am. And to help that along, and to help that very powerful habit that we've got, is that you can turn it around and actually begin to be positive with yourself. Find good things. If you're going to chat to yourself, then look for your good qualities. Look for your good qualities. Look for. Say, look, this is changing. I'm now in the mode of learning to like myself. And I'm not going to like myself if I keep beating myself up all the time, because this is going nowhere. So I must try to just dampen this habit down by simply stopping myself from going there, but also having the antidote there of bringing of reflecting upon the quality. We've all got good qualities, far more than we can see or we're prepared to see. We don't want to like ourselves, almost. To reflect upon those and learn not to go there, with the awareness to see what you're doing in the same way that you do with other aspects of your makeup, of your personality, where you begin to say no, the power of no, leave it alone, and if it rages, it rages, but let it go. Don't indulge all the time, see yourself indulging and pull out of it, distract yourself in some way, so that you begin to make inroads into something that's very strong, that you know, that at least you're no longer feeling, or if you are still feeling it, which you will, you've just shut down a bit of the food. You're not feeling it so much as you used to. And all the time you can begin to open and reflect and see a bigger picture beyond this me, this obsession with ourselves, begin to open up to a bigger, which this training will take you to, will begin to show you that there is something beyond me, that there is something quite wonderful that's taking place, and there's something very wonderful within me, actually. Begin to find it, begin to access it, begin to look for it. Look for the positive, look for the good. So it's an antidote to these things that essentially you're leaving alone. And if you get in there and you start becoming willful with it, and that won't work. You'll end up compounding it. You'll end up turning yourself into something else. That's not going to work. That's not the dharmic way. We have that opportunity, just, you know, I think, as I say, you know, to reflect upon these features continually, but especially now. We've got this day, we've got this long day, we've got an extra period at the end, something that we never do normally. It's an unusual day, it's a unique day in our calendar. So therefore see it as, you know, as a special day, as a special occasion, if you like, to be able to really and actually join the rest of the rest of, certainly in our culture anyway, of when we're encouraged to reflect and renew ourselves with new resolutions for the new year that starts tomorrow, that we're gonna turn over a new leaf. We're going to let go of our old habits, and we're going to make a real commitment to change, to changing those things that somehow are still ingrained or have got themselves rooted over the recent past. That we're now going to look at those things and look at them and see the need to be positive, to be open to these things, approach them in a friendly and in a positive way, so that then we can start with a fresh, clean sheet first thing tomorrow morning. That's New Year's Eve. And it's special invitation, the special invitation of New Year's Eve, that we can accept and make use of skillfully, take it into the new year. Well, we have another 10 minutes. Well, I've touched on it a lot and written about it, is that crucial relationship is to develop the dharmic relationship with the physical, if you're talking about, you know, the experiences you can have on the cushion as an example. Look at your relationship. It's there because you're doing something physically that brings it on, possibly. It may not be that, actually. It could be there because of emotion, although we don't see it in those terms. Look at your relationship. How attached are you to that experience? Do you get yourself wrapped up in it? Oh, my. I'm always suffering. If I'm not suffering when I'm in this place here meditating, and then when I go out there, I'm suffering. And I come in here and I'm suffering just the same, and I've got these aches. And it just goes on. My poor legs, they've been paining me like this. I've been doing this for years, and I'm still paining. And I'm sure there's all sorts of things going on here, and I just look round the room, and I can't believe anybody is suffering the same as much as me. Look at them all tranquil, look at them all just blissed out, their heads all except me and my legs and my pain. When is that bell going to go? When am I going to be released? And so you just buy into the whole thing, and it's my pain and my leg, my suffering, my woe, me, my. And so it's something. We pump it up. But there's another way, is that you can accept that it's there. You don't buy into it. You can actually see that this is not my pain. It's not even my leg, never mind my pain. It is what it is. That's the way it is. And I know that, you know, in a few minutes I'll be able to undo myself and it will go. And I won't buy into it. It's there. And it's I'm not going to suppress it, but it's almost like it's on the periphery because I'm giving my attention to my openness. I'm not allowing this to take me over. And it can be there on your radar, but it's not something that you attach to put it in a word. When we attach, we suffer. It's a simple equation. And when we don't attach, we begin to go beyond suffering. And like I always say, this life, this one, and when you've got this body, it's full of molehills. There's always going to be something that's going on. But they're molehills. We come along, and because of self-identity, and it's me and mine, we turn molehills into mountains. And that experience becomes considerably more difficult. So what was just, say, a little pain becomes a big pain. Something really, really so difficult. Whereas, in fact, if you have the right relationship with it and you accept it, and you develop a disinterest towards it. Huh. And you don't have comments for it, it's just part of the experience of sitting meditation. And you actually don't give it any thought, any concept, you don't bring anything to it. Certainly no self-identity. This is my leg is hurting so much. Oh, my leg. You don't go there. You don't even begin to go. Once you get in there, it's so difficult to get out. You develop a disinterest towards it. It's there, and you're not denying it, but it's there. There you go. I'm carrying on. And it will go into change because I know the law of impermanence. I know it's going to change. And so you develop a disinterest in it. That's not, you're not denying it, you're not suppressing it, but you're not buying into it. And then, okay, it is what it is, and it's uncomfortable. But I know from my experience, it's 10% of when I used to buy into, and it was me and my pain. When's that bloody bell going to go? When is that person? I'm sure he's fallen asleep. And you're convinced that that bell is not going to go. For what reason? That he's fallen asleep or something's happened. And immediately you buy into that, suddenly that pain just goes like this. It suddenly becomes so much more intense. Because you don't go there. That's what you learn with this training, is that you learn to leave things alone. So when you don't go there, you don't create scenarios and pictures and events and stuff all around it. But you leave it; it is what it is. And then when the time comes, you uncross your legs, and you get up, and you have no memory of it. You don't carry it with you. You don't take it with you off the cushion. That's where we suffer again, because we carry things around. Leave it, forget it. Forget it. Just forget it. In fact, forget your meditation. Forget you're even meditating. Just get up, walk away and go to the next thing. Go and have your dinner or walk or whatever you do. And then you come back to the next one and give yourself 100% to that. Rather than come with all sorts of expectations. The last one was like that. So this one's going to be like this. I was suffering in that one. I'm going to suffer in this. Oh, my God, I've got another 4 of these to do before I go to bed. All this projection, all this. All you're doing, this is the creator of suffering. But that's a metaphor for the whole of your life, everything in your life. This is not special for this. What this is allowing you to do is to really see how it works. Because it's all nice and quiet, and you're not distracted. You can really focus in on this and see your relationship with something, with an experience, and see how you attach to it. And now it's my experience, and it happens to be my suffering. And then when you get off the cushion, you take it, you carry it with you. You're still carrying your suffering with you. You have the opportunity in this environment, over these days, to really, really look at that and see your relationship and see that the more you identify with it, the more you hold on to it, the more you grab it, possess it, the more you will suffer. That is the most fantastic lesson, and this is why I always encourage people to, if they possibly can, to try Half Lotus, because that really is a challenging posture. If you can, it's not essential. I mean, all the postures are challenging. Because it's not only about going through that experience, it's what you can learn from it. So that you get to be like the monk that I often, the little story I often quote of the newcomer to the Zendo who's having huge difficulties with his legs. And he asked the monk sitting next to him, who's been sitting for 15 years, Do you still get pain in your legs? And he says, oh yes. Which really, what? 15 years and you still get pain in your legs? He said, but the difference between now and then is that now I don't care. So he doesn't carry it. He sits. It is what it is. He gets off the cushion and it's gone. He carries nothing. He has nothing on his shoulders. And that's the metaphor for life. And you can see that the cause of suffering is your identity. It's all about me. It's mine. This is my suffering, my leg, my pain, me, 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 me. And then you build all these worlds around it. Whereas actually you don't have to do that. You can just stay with the experience without putting any labels on it at all. Leave it, it is what it is. And I tell you from my experience with that, you'll find so often that that thing there actually can actually fall away completely. Because actually the reason why this thing goes on and on and on very often is because you're holding on to it and you're feeding it. Whereas in fact, if you learn not to hold, not to feed, that these things rise and pass, and then there's nothing, there's no pain, it's gone, because there's nothing there at all. You think you're going to have it for the next, well, forever, never mind the next day or the next to the retreat. It's gone. What's that about? And then damn me, it can come back. And that's irrational, that's illogical. Hang on, if I'm just stretching my staff, I reach a point where it all settles down, therefore I should never have to experience that again. It's gone. But in fact, it doesn't seem to work that way. There's something else going on there. And I think there's a lot of emotion in there. There's a lot of emotional stuff that's looking for somewhere to express itself, and it's looking for you to fall for it and buy into it and just reinforce it and keep the thing going. You can learn, you know, it's something that can take a long time before the penny drops. But it is about identifying. It's identifying with it. I always remember my teacher said years and years ago, something always struck me. He said, the problem that we got, in fact, the only problem that we got, is that we take everything personally. You think that in your life. Just imagine if you didn't take things personally, all the experiences you have in your life, how practically everything would just pass through you. You'd see it, you'd experience it, but you wouldn't get reactions. So we take things so personally, and people talk to us and say things. Just ponder that. And that goes for everything. We take it personally. And when we take it personally, we suffer. Simple. And if you can go beyond taking it personal, just take it as what it is, what it really is, it's just, if you like, an empty dharma. It's just something that we make it into something. In its nature, it's nothing at all. We turn it into something. We manufacture something that in its essence is quite innocent, is nothing. We put a self-identity on it, and then we suffer. That's for everything. And you can really see it in its darkness on the cushion, and how you can, you know, again, for my own thing, certainly for those first few years, I mean, nobody here suffers like I've suffered. I know you can laugh, and I understand, but nobody, I tell you, unbelievable. But I, you know, it took a while to clock it, but I just thought, well, you know, the option I get is just to get up and clear off and not come back again. I mean, there was nobody there with a gun making me go through this. I mean, I was doing it on my own free will. And just seeing, well, just leave it alone. It's no good. What are you making a problem of it for? Because it's not going to go away. Why make an issue of it? The only way you're going to not experience it is to go home. And if you're not going to go home, if you're going to sit, then you're going to experience it. So therefore, why then make a problem? It's going to be what it's going to be. Why do you have to heap on top of that and see that you're making it so much worse for yourself? It is what it is. It's crap and you love it to go away. But it's not. So therefore, rather than make it 10 times worse, just leave it alone. Don't give it attention. It's there. I had a koan at the time. Give yourself to the koan. Sit there, sit still, and sit there and sit through and sit with your koan. It's there, and then the bell goes. And then you get up and you forget about it. You don't care, oh my leg, oh my God, it's going to be the same the next period. And then the rest of the day, and then, oh my God. And you think, well, hang on, this is just, what am I doing this for? What's the point of it? Is it going to help the situation? No, it's not. It makes it 100 times worse. So you have to wake up to that and think, well, am I a masochist? Am I stupid? Yes, I'm stupid, but now I'm not going to be quite so stupid because I'm not going to compound it. These are the great lessons that we learn, the great lessons we learn about ourselves. You don't need to sit in samadhi and have deep insight with this. You can see it on a much more mundane level. And then you can see it in your life. See, you know, somebody's just said something to me that I don't like, you know, a bit personal. I grabbed hold of it and I'm thinking that, you know. And then I'm gonna have my revenge. And all of that. Something actually is an empty dharma. And can remain an empty dharma. That's how we discover that we are the creator of suffering. It's not your mother and your father. It's not this. It's you. You have to own it. Take responsibility for it. You are the owner. You are the creator. You are the creator, so therefore you can uncreate. That's the Dharma. And that will challenge a lifetime of conditioning. That will challenge everything inside of you. It is not a small exercise. This goes deep. But that's the path. That's the way out of suffering. That's the way out. That's the third noble truth. There's a way out of suffering. It's called non-attachment. And that's for you to learn and slowly put into place in your daily life with little things here and there. Be alive and realise that, hey, here I go, I'm about to make a mountain out of a molehill here. Self-identity. It's all that always ever comes back to. No, I'm not going to do that. Leave it alone. Then you begin to taste freedom.